This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler. To the Middle East, to the question of the Gaza ceasefire and prisoner exchange. A headline from Jerusalem in these last hours. Vance, that's the vice president, in Israel says, quote, peace is going to last, end quote. Hamas disarmament non-negotiable. At the same time, we have a report that the IDF is bringing bodies said to be two of the slain out of Gaza. No confirmation who they are or who they're supposed to be. I welcome to help me through these very confusing headlines and more, Jonathan Schanzer, the executive director of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Jonathan, the slow motion of returning of the bodies of the murdered individuals, Israeli citizens and sometimes dual nationals, is that purposeful on Hamas's part? Is this their leverage that they're dragging this out? Do they have an ambition that they're moving towards in this ghoulish fashion? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think we're trying to essentially understand why the slow pace. There are a few explanations that we're hearing right now. One is that Hamas is deliberately slow rolling the United States and Israel because they know that every time they return hostages, they lose leverage. They're finding themselves weaker by the day. And so why speed up that process? Why hasten it? That's, I think, question one. Question two is, do they need to move rubble? Is getting to these bodies more difficult right now because of the damage that has been done to the Gaza Strip? That is plausible, although probably not very likely. And then there's the other question, which is, does anybody know where some of these bodies are buried, given that some of Hamas's top leaders, many of whom, in fact, have been killed by the IDF over the last 2 years? Perhaps it's now difficult. My guess is that Hamas still knows where the bodies are because these are some of their most valued assets. In fact, probably their most valuable assets as it relates to the leverage that they have in this war. So I believe that the answer is likely the first explanation, that they are slow rolling this process. I think they understand that, they're being asked to dismantle themselves. And they don't want to do that. It's not hard to understand that this terrorist organization that's been around since 1988 would not be in a hurry to destroy itself and to dismantle itself. So I think they're buying for time. I think that the Qataris and the Turks, their key patrons, are likely guiding them in this process. And stalling a bit as they look for solutions for how Hamas may be allowed to stay alive in the Gaza Strip. I expect there to be some shenanigans, as we would say, as we get closer. Right now, the number of bodies, assuming these two bodies return today, were actual bodies of slain hostages, will be down to 14. So that number is dwindling. And as that number dwindles down further, so will Hamas's leverage. They're looking for a way out, John. We'll wait and see whether they find one.
I have read that if Hamas had good intentions, they would ask for help because you can be guaranteed the Israelis would be in there with everything that moves buildings. There would be no hesitation whatsoever. Hamas knows this, Jonathan. They know perfectly well if they brought the Israelis in, the bodies would be returned completely. There's no logic to them claiming the buildings have fallen down. They don't want Israel in there. Why? What are they up to?
Well, I think that's part of the thing. Right now, John, I think there is a new reality that is taking shape. The Israelis control what is now commonly known to us, to all of us, as the yellow line. It is more than 50% of Gaza that is now fully controlled by the Israelis. And what remains in the more populous areas of Gaza, this is Hamas controlled territory. What they are doing inside their territory the territory that they control, where they have that military control, where the guns are still being brandished, where their opposition is being slaughtered in the streets in summary executions. This is what I'm watching for right now. The very, I would say the overwhelming likelihood is that at the end of this process, Hamas refuses to disarm. The Israelis maintain that territory beyond the yellow line. It is still Gaza. It is still areas where the Palestinians will be expected to live, but it will be under Israeli military control or under the control of some other international coalition. And then there will be this small area, let's say roughly 45% of the Gaza Strip, that will be under the control of Hamas. And the Israelis will attack it whenever they are attacked.
We hear from Vice President Vance speaking for the United States. Peace is going to last. I want to check other capitals. The first capital to check is Cairo, given its position in the negotiation. What does Cairo want?
Well, it's interesting. I think Cairo would like this war to end. But we are also hearing, John, and this is information that is now, I think I can confirm with a fairly high level of certitude, that they are putting things in the Sinai that they are not supposed to. Aggressive, offensive weapons. This is now being talked about with the Israelis. There was a senior Egyptian official that is that either visited Israel today or will visit tomorrow, according to varying reports. But this is, I think, the new topic that needs to be discussed. It's not just going to be about the end state in Gaza. It will also be about how will the Egyptians and Israelis deconflict amidst these tensions and amidst some of this new hardware being moved into places where it should not be.
You've talked over the weeks about weapon systems, tanks, I think, moving into the Sinai. Is that what we're referring to?
It's beyond tanks at this point, John. We're hearing about underground structures that are going to house missiles, extended runways, and other things that have caught the attention of military analysts both in Jerusalem and around the world.
Then we'll go to Ankara, because you also said there was reason to believe that Turkey was building up its offensive capability. Do I remember correctly?
Well, they're calling for offensive action against Israel, a pan-Islamic force, if you will. They also have a significant presence in Syria. They've got a presence that they're trying to build up in Gaza. We know that they've been trying to funnel weapons and other supplies to Lebanon, where Hezbollah has been awaiting some of their delivery. So the Turks are up to no good across the entire region. I believe that the Trump administration could be making a catastrophic mistake by trusting them and trying to have them play a role in post-Hamas Gaza. I think this is highly problematic and something that we're going to have to watch very carefully. I don't know if the Trump administration sees that full picture.
Doha, it got a defense pact out of this. Okay, fine. But is it still playing the double game? No change.
I think it is. I think they are still patrons of Hamas. Hamas is still based in their country. And I think they are still trying to help guide Hamas out of the painful position that it finds itself. My guess, John, is that the Qataris will try to rename Hamas. That at the end of the day, they will say that the leaders are no longer there. They'll have a few leaders that leave in exile. They will create a new Islamist entity that will still, in essence, support the Muslim Brotherhood ideology that Qatar also seeks to spread around the region. They will call it something else. Not unlike, John, what we saw in Syria when the Nusra Front, an avowed al-Qaeda affiliate, suddenly was renamed Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS.
Which later was renamed the Syrian government. One more check. Inside Gaza itself, in conversation with your colleague, Ahmad Sharawi, I learned that the gunfire that we've been hearing about, the executions that they wanted us to see, that is Hamas battling with clans. The Dagmish clan, for one of them, I believe they were the kidnappers of Shalit many years ago. But they're also said to be anti-Hamas militia inside Gaza, nowhere near the scale of Gaza's still rich pool of gunmen, but significant. Is that something that Hamas counted on? The battle now, were they prepared for it?
I don't know if they were prepared, John, but I think it's always been a realistic feature of Gaza that clan and family and tribe have played a significant role in the governance of, by the way, not just Gaza, but the Palestinian territories in the West Bank, as well as in places like Lebanon or Jordan or Syria. And so what we're seeing right now, and this, I think, was entirely predictable. But as Hamas gets weaker, these tribes are going to try to exert their authority. They're going to try to project power. This is leading to clashes on the streets. It is simply a grab for power. That is what is happening. Hamas is trying to maintain its power through brutality, through the projection of violence and strength. The question is whether there will be clans or families or tribes that are able to push back and perhaps control certain pockets of territories. We could see at the end of this process different pockets across Gaza controlled by different actors and different entities. In other words, this could be sort of Bantustans across the Gaza Strip. That could happen in the West Bank as well. It's what we're already seeing in places like Syria, where the regime found itself weaker over time. And so the Kurds and the Alawites and others found themselves more powerful and able to exert control. That could very easily, realistically occur in the Gaza Strip.
Finally, you tell me that Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner met with Hamas leadership. Is that correct?
It is. They met with Khalil al-Hayya. He was the Hamas leader he's the leader of the delegation in Doha. It was his son who was killed in that attack launched by the Israelis on September 9th. And Mr. Witkoff met with him. So did Mr. Kushner. But it was interesting because Mr. Witkoff spoke to Khalil al-Hayya, and they spoke about both of them losing a son. And they seemed to have a certain amount of sympathy for one another. This is a fascinating development, a bit troubling, though, because we have to acknowledge here that the United States has always said that it does not negotiate with terrorists. And this is a policy dating back to Richard Nixon, to the early 1970s. This seems to be a contravention of that norm that we have established. And I wonder why this was done. I can certainly see the benefit. He was able to get those 20 hostages home to Israel, and he's still getting the deceased hostages sent back as well. But at what cost? And I don't know if we know the answer to that at this moment, John. It's something that I want to wait and watch for.
Jonathan Schanzer, Executive Director, Foundation for Defense of Democracies. We're headed out north to Lebanon.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.